U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken arrived in Kyiv on an unannounced visit Wednesday.
And today, we're announcing new assistance totaling more than $1 billion in this common effort.
Plus, U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris spoke to South Asian leaders during the U.S.-ASEAN summit hosted by outgoing chair Indonesia.
The United States will continue to press the regime to end the horrific violence, to release all those unjustly detained, and to reestablish Myanmar's path to inclusive democracy.
Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese made a new business pitch Wednesday at the ASEAN summit in Jakarta. Today is Thursday, September 7th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Good morning. I'm Rick Pantaleo in Washington. U.S. Secretary of State Blinken arrived in Kyiv on an unannounced visit Wednesday. He met with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba. Blinken also announced a new aid package from the U.S. to Ukraine.
We will continue to stand by Ukraine's side, and today we're announcing new assistance totaling more than $1 billion in this common effort. That includes $665.5 million in new military and civilian security assistance. In total, we committed over $43 billion in security assistance since the beginning of the Russian aggression.
The Secretary of State says the new aid package comes as Ukraine's counteroffensive picks up steam.
Progress has accelerated in the past few weeks. This new assistance will help sustain it and build further momentum.
Speaking in a meeting with Blinken, President Zelensky says his nation appreciates the additional U.S. aid.
Thank you so much. We are really thankful to you. We are very thankful to White House, to President Biden. It is best regards to him from me, and we are thankful to bipartisan support to Congress that you show great unity around Ukraine.
Meanwhile, a Russian missile on Wednesday tore through an outdoor market in eastern Ukraine. At least 17 people were killed and more than two dozen others wounded. Zelensky condemned the attack on a civilian target. A chair with Myanmar's flag was left empty as U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris spoke to Southeast Asian leaders during the ASEAN summit hosted by outgoing chair Indonesia. VOA White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wuda-Kaswara is traveling with Harris and sends this report from Jakarta.
As U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris met with leaders of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, an empty chair with Myanmar's flag served as a reminder from ASEAN that the country must return to democracy, a message underscored by Harris.
The United States will continue to press the regime to end the horrific violence, to release all those unjustly detained, and to reestablish Myanmar's path to inclusive democracy.
Earlier this week, ASEAN leaders announced they would bar Myanmar from its turn as chair in 2026, appointing the Philippines instead, as they blame the country's ongoing bloodshed following the 2021 coup by the junta. Meeting at the summit sidelines, Harris and Indonesian President Joko Widodo announced plans to upgrade the country's ties to a comprehensive strategic partnership, the highest level for a non-treaty ally.
As a comprehensive strategic partner, U.S. support is expected for the success of the ASEAN summit, including ensuring the relevance of the East ASEAN summit.
Harris' visit comes at a time of sharpened geopolitical rivalries and heightened tensions in the region. Chinese Premier Li Qiang also met with ASEAN leaders in Jakarta.
To keep differences under control, what is essential now is to oppose picking sides, oppose bloc confrontation, and oppose a new Cold War. Differences and disputes between countries must be properly handled.
Leaders ended their day with a gala dinner held outdoors in a city park despite a recent spike in Jakarta's smog. On Thursday, they will be attending the East Asia Summit, which brings together ASEAN and its partners, the U.S., China, Russia, Australia, India, Japan, New Zealand, and South Korea. Patsy Wuda-Kaswara, VOA News, Jakarta.
Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese made a new business pitch Wednesday to Southeast Asian leaders at the ASEAN Summit in Jakarta. Southeast Asia is Australia's second largest trading partner behind China, but the Canberra government is hoping to deepen economic ties with its neighbors to reduce its reliance on Beijing. Phil Mercer continues our coverage.
Trade is the lifeblood of the Australian economy. It contributes more than 40% of the nation's income, or GDP. 12 of Australia's top 15 export markets are in Asia. China is by far the most dominant, receiving about a third of Australia's exports of goods and services. The Association of Southeast Asian Nations, or ASEAN, is also a significant trading bloc, accounting for 12% of Australia's total exports. In 2021, Australia's trade with ASEAN countries was $80.8 billion, which is greater than its two-way trade with Japan and the United States, according to official government data. Coal and natural gas are key Australian exports to the ASEAN grouping, along with agricultural goods and education services. ASEAN members sell petroleum products, vehicles, and transport services to Australia. The ASEAN region includes some of the fastest-growing countries in the world, with increasingly urbanized, digitized, and educated populations. But a report commissioned by the government in Canberra says that trading ties with ASEAN members have become stagnant and need a boost by increasing the number of flights to the region as well as reducing barriers to foreign investment. Australia's annual economic ties with Indonesia are worth about $4.64 billion, or less than 2% of Australia's total global trade. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese told Parliament in Canberra Tuesday that it was one area where he hopes to boost commercial ties.
We have Indonesia, one of the world's largest economies and one of the world's largest democracies, just on our doorsteps. But the truth is, it's not even in our top trading partners.
Australia's trade with China has been disrupted in recent years because of various geopolitical disputes, including democracy in Hong Kong, freedom of navigation in the South China Sea, COVID-19, and human rights, prompting Australia to seek new markets and diversify its trade. Lee Howard is the head of Asia Link Business at the University of Melbourne. He tells VOA that ASEAN members represent sound opportunities for Australia.
Diversification continues to be a theme as businesses look for new markets, either in addition to or instead of China. Once again, with the proximity of Southeast Asia, the rising affluent class in large populous countries, this makes for a compelling opportunity for Australian businesses.
The 10-nation ASEAN bloc was formed in 1967. It includes Indonesia, Malaysia, the Philippines, Singapore, Thailand, Brunei, Vietnam, Laos, Myanmar, and Cambodia. This year's ASEAN summit in Jakarta will be notable for the absence of Chinese President Xi Jinping and his US counterpart Joe Biden. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
We're following these other stories from around the world. The Somali government says it plans to shift military tactics against al-Shabaab amid increased resistance and threats coming from the militants, senior officials confirmed to VOA Somali. An American private sector delegation opened meetings in Afghanistan with officials and local counterparts Wednesday in the first interaction since the Taliban seized power from a U.S.-backed government 2 years ago. And the death toll from severe rainstorms that lashed parts of Greece, Turkey, and Bulgaria increased to 11 Wednesday after rescue teams in the three neighboring countries recovered four more bodies. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Rick Pantaleo. a liberal group has filed suit to keep Donald Trump off Colorado's primary ballot. From the Associated Press, Sagar Magani reports.
A liberal group has filed suit to keep Donald Trump off Colorado's primary ballot. Trump is far and away the GOP nomination frontrunner as he seeks a return here to the White House. But a Washington-based watchdog group called Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics argues the Constitution makes Trump ineligible for another run. The suit cites the 14th Amendment and a rarely used clause aimed at candidates who have supported an insurrection. The filing's likely the first step in a legal challenge seemingly headed for the Supreme Court. Sagar Magani at the White House.
Also on Wednesday, the former president said in a radio interview that he would be willing to testify in his own defense in a trial over his alleged mishandling of classified documents at his Florida resort. The news comes as key witnesses in the case has entered into a deal with prosecutors to provide testimony, his former attorney said in a Wednesday court filing. Elsewhere, the judge overseeing the Georgia election subversion case involving the former president denied requests by two of the 19 defendants to be tried alone, instead saying Kenneth Cheeseborough and Sidney Powell would be tried together starting next month. The hearing provided some insight into how the case could play out, with prosecutors estimating a trial would take 4 months and that they'd call more than 150 witnesses. U.S. President Joe Biden is in India this week, joining leaders from the group of 20 leading rich and developing nations to discuss issues such as climate change, debt restructuring, and the war in Ukraine, as well as welcoming new members. Earlier, the Biden administration laid out its priorities. VOA's Anita Powell reports from the White House.
President Joe Biden heads to the G20 summit in India with big goals and high hopes that the group of 20 leading rich and developing nations can work together, the White House says. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan.
We hope this G20 summit will show that the world's major economies can work together even in challenging times. So as we head into New Delhi, our focus is going to be on delivering for developing countries, making progress on key priorities for the American people, from climate to technology, and showing our commitment to the G20 as a forum that can actually, as I said before, deliver.
The gathering in India's capital, New Delhi, will be dominated by issues the two dozen delegations don't always agree on, such as the war in Ukraine, climate change, a push to reform multilateral institutions that provide financing to developing nations, and the likely decision to welcome the 55-member African Union into the body. Analysts say the absence of two key leaders, Russia's President Vladimir Putin and China's President Xi Jinping, will impact proceedings. Professor John Curtin heads the G20 research group at the University of Toronto.
But I think it's good news that Putin yet again has decided to skip the summit, as he did Bali last year. And it even looks like Xi Jinping of China might not show up. That will make it a lot easier for all of the other countries to take action.
As Biden said when asked about Xi's absence from the summit,
I am disappointed.
Sullivan on Tuesday did not say when such a meeting might happen. And analysts say they hope that Delhi and Beijing can see past their disagreement over a new Chinese territorial map that India disputes. Stephanie Siegel is a senior fellow of the economics program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
The geopolitical tensions were certainly there well before India's G20 year. The fact that they are heightened and that there's a focus on them going into this leaders' summit is not ideal. My hope and expectation would be, again, the framing of this summit on economic issues, that they can manage to put the border dispute in a separate category.
She said she hopes the delegations can see beyond their differences and focus on reforming multilateral institutions like the World Bank, a move analysts say would have wide-ranging effects. Again, Stephanie Siegel.
And what those reforms, if they actually go through, would accomplish is putting a greater focus on what we call global public goods. So things like climate, pandemic preparedness, fragility, food insecurity, And the reforms would allow these institutions, including the World Bank, to provide additional financing to both emerging market and low-income countries, and financing at far more preferential terms.
The summit begins Saturday in New Delhi. Anita Powell, VOA News, The White House.
Gabon civilians are celebrating the military junta's liberation Tuesday of several political prisoners jailed for years without trial by ousted President Ali Bongo. Coup leader Brice Nkema also received his first foreign delegation led by the Central African Republic president. The president was dispatched by Central African leaders to negotiate a return to civilian rule after suspending Gabon from their regional bloc. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from neighboring Cameroon.
Gabon's military junta says it has freed several people held without trial by the government of ousted President Ali Bongo. Included in the release was Jean-Rémy Yama, leader of the Coalition of Gabon State Workers Trade Unions, who was detained in February 2022. Yama was accused of embezzlement and abuse of confidence, a charge trade union leaders in Gabon describe as unfounded. Gabon's trade unions say Yama was a vocal critic of Bongo's refusal to improve conditions of state workers in the oil-producing nation. Renaud Alogo Akwe, former Director General of Gabon's National Social Insurance and Health Fund, who was arrested in December 2019 and given a 10-year jail sentence for misappropriating public funds, was released, as was Landre Nzue, former mayor of Gabon's capital Libreville. 62-year-old Nzue, who is a former Politburo member of Bongo's Gabon's Democratic Party, told Gabon's national television Tuesday the military junta has saved him from the mental and psychological torture he was going through at the Libreville Central Prison.
3 years derrière les barreaux sans jugement.
He says he is very thankful to Gabon's military and junta leader Brice Oligui Nguema for ordering his release from the central prison in Libreville, where he was incarcerated for 3 years illegally without trial. He says he is ready to work with Nguema for a return to democracy, normal life, and the development of Gabon. Gabon State TV showed images of scores of people, including opposition supporters, celebrating the liberation of the prisoners. Nzue has always claimed he wanted Bongo to serve Gabon, accusing him instead of serving his family. Bongo accused Nzue of stealing public funds. During his swearing-in as interim president on Monday, coup leader Brice Oligui Nguema promised amnesty for people he described as prisoners of conscience. He did not give the number of such prisoners, but Gabon's opposition says there are many. Nguema also promised to facilitate the return of all Gabon citizens exiled abroad. The military junta has also announced an imminent appointment of a transitional government of what it calls experienced and seasoned people. ACAS says Touadéra will meet Bongo to be updated on his state of health and the well-being of the ousted president's family. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Women in Iran who were killed in the past year as they engaged in peaceful resistance to Islamic rule were the focus of a recent exhibition in the U.S. city of Rockville, Maryland. As we hear from VOA's Julie Tabo, the exhibit paid tribute to those Iranian women through art.
A series of hands appear to rise from the floor in this exhibition at a gallery near Washington. They're still and silent, but pack a powerful message. Each bears a name of one of the hundreds of victims killed in Iran for being involved with protests following the death of Mahsa Jina Amini, a 22-year-old Kurdish woman who was arrested, imprisoned, and who subsequently died in the custody of Iran's morality police in September 2022, after she allegedly violated the strict dress code to cover her hair. Her death triggered widespread protests throughout the country, which inspired artist Kiana Honarmand. She spoke with VOA via Skype.
just watching the violence was absolutely devastating, to see so many people, including men, women, children, getting killed and thousands arrested.
Hunarman's work pays homage to the demonstrators, whose woman, life, freedom protests evolved into a powerful movement across Iran and other parts of the world.
I just had to talk about this because it's the largest, the most significant feminist movement of our time, and it's not talked about as much as it needs to be.
What resonated for me very much was seeing a hair all over the walls here, because hair has been so central to the struggle for Iranian women and their freedom. And the hands, because it showed these bloody hands symbolizing how much violence there has been against women who want their rights in Iran.
I think now more than ever, we need to really stand up for women's rights everywhere. It's been absolutely inspiring to watch what women in Iran are doing now, even every day, with the simple acts of disobedience, such as just going outside, not wearing their compulsory hijabs. They are very courageous, and I am just in awe of that.
Hunarman says her goal is to continue making hands, one for each victim of the protests whose death has been confirmed. Julie Tabo, VOA News, Rockville, Maryland.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. Until next time, this is Rick Pantaleo in Washington, wishing you good day, good health, and good news tomorrow.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On February 1, 2021, the Burmese military overthrew the democratically elected civilian government in Burma in a coup. Since then, the military junta has been using increasingly violent methods to repress its own people. The Burmese military regime has killed an estimated 3,900 citizens since taking power. Most recently, fighter jet and helicopter airstrikes have killed 11 citizens near Nyang Khon village. According to a recent statement from the U.S. Department of the Treasury, up to another 80 civilians, including women and school children, were killed by airstrikes in a village in the Sagaing region of central Burma. In response to these despicable actions, the U.S. Department of the Treasury's Office of Foreign Assets Control, or OFAC, is expanding sanctions on Burma to include the jet fuel sector pursuant to Executive Order 14014. OFAC is designating two individuals and three entities for their roles in procuring jet fuel and distributing it to the Burmese military. Kin Pyu Win has been sanctioned for her association with several companies within the Asia Sun Group, which was previously designated for operating in the Burmese defense sector. Kin also controls three Singapore-based holding companies, Shun Energy PTE Limited, PEIA PTE Limited, and PEI Energy PTE Limited, which also have been sanctioned. Zalman Toon is being sanctioned after Kin transferred directorship and ownership of 11 companies in the Asia Sun Group to him. According to Executive Order 14014, all property, interests in property, and entities belonging to Kin Pyu Win and Zalman Toon that are in the United States or in the possession or control of U.S. persons are blocked and must be reported to OFAC. By expanding the use of our sanctions authority to target an additional sector critical to the military regime, we are able to further deprive the regime of the resources that enable it to oppress its citizens, said Undersecretary of the Treasury for Terrorism and Financial Intelligence, Brian E. Nelson, in a written statement. the United States remains committed to supporting the people of Burma in their pursuit of freedom and democracy.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.